This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 8. And it says, "And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad?'" This is a prime example of every husband's struggle when interacting with their wife. Occasionally, it just doesn't make any sense, and they're just sad for no reason, or they don't eat. Or it's the opposite, and they are just eating a lot and sad at the same time. And Elkanah is going through every young man's battle here. My name is Ryan, and this is Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy, and I'm sitting in my new/old place because I moved out of the pastor's flat. And the sound quality is just going to be a little bit different because my computer refused to turn on this morning.
Boo.
So I might sound like I'm in a bigger room than usual, but I'm not really. I'm in a smaller room, believe me.
Well, hopefully with the magic of editing, I'll be able to make it sound like it usually does. But today we are going to be looking back and looking forward simultaneously. Like, what's an animal that can do that? An owl? Can owls move both their eyes? Griffin. A griffin?
Yeah, or a griffin's puffin? Magic. They can do whatever they want.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sure they can. I don't know why I went for puffin. I thought you were talking about puffins.
Can puffins do that?
Puffins look really cool. Have you ever noticed just how unique a puffin's face is? It's like a parrot and a penguin did the fusion dance from Dragon Ball Z and suddenly just became these wonderfully obscure birds. I love it.
I definitely don't know what the fusion dance is, but I think I can understand.
Yeah,
it's
from
like
context.
It's like a chemical... Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that two beings do to merge into one.
Oh.
Exactly. That's... Yes, anyway. So today we are going to be looking back at what was and looking forward to this new era that we are entering into. Now, as you will recall, last week's episode was an in-between, an interlude, in which we talked about what we've been doing lately, and that's a bit of an explanation as to why the episodes have been a little bit scarce of late, but they are no longer scarce. We are back in action. This episode is recorded out of continuity with the following
very
ones
much.
Because of a lost... What do you call it? A lost tape. A missing tape. A recording that disappeared. So now if anybody ever... or rather, if I ever come across that missing file that I've been looking for, then maybe we could put it out as a bonus, but why would you want to double up? I don't know.
Maybe it was better. Yeah. Maybe this one will be so much better. I don't know. I don't remember what we talked about.
Well, that one I don't think had any audio issues, so it could be that one was already better, but we'll leave that up to your imagination. Okay, so we are looking back at the book of Judges. Jeremy, what can you remember about the book of Judges and the context by which we are able to see and begin to read this book of 1 Samuel?
The book of Judges looked at this almost depressing part of Israel's history that was a cycle of disobedience and destruction, and therefore a lot of almost sadness, because the people would be like, "Yeah, God, that's cool, we'll do whatever we want." And there's this repeating line of, "And every man did what was right in his own heart." So instead of following after God, they all split up into almost tribal groups that had different oppressors and different kings, and God would rescue them, and then another king would come and oppress them, and God would rescue them, and blah, blah, blah. And so different parts of Israel were faithful in different parts of Israel, but definitely not. And so as we walk into the book of Samuel, it's like God trying to get the Israelites' attention with this really good guy, Samuel, which then ends up with them wanting a king like the others, because a king apparently unites a nation, and that's what they think God wants, / they just want.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting back picture.
Yeah, there is some debate as to the exact time in which this story begins. Some people say that 1 Samuel, at least the beginning of it, overlaps with the end of Judges, in which we found Samson to be the judge of Israel and the Philistines were oppressing them and all that. Others say that it happens after the book of Judges, and me, quite frankly, I have no clue. So let's just assume it's happening after, or maybe this beginning bit before Samuel is born. Maybe that's happening during the time of Samson, and then once Samuel is old enough to judge Israel, he kind of takes the mantle away from Samson, who brought down the house on the Philistines.
He did a very good job.
Yeah. So Samuel has been regarded as the final judge of Israel, and that is mainly due to the fact that his successor in leadership was a king. So he was the last judge before the kings, but he also doubles as the first prophet of Israel. There have been prophetic moments throughout the Bible so far. Moses had a couple for sure, but Samuel is largely regarded as the first of the prophets, because he is a spiritual influence on the king, more than just a counselor. He is one that provides spiritual direction for the people of Israel during the time of a ruling king. So that's as much as we know about Samuel from our Sunday school upbringing to this point, I think, without looking into it too much.
And he had a sweet bottle of oil.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And who he chooses to anoint is his own business, I guess. Jeremy, why don't you start us out at chapter 1 of 1 Samuel. Now, we are remembering that the main things that have happened in Israel recently have happened towards the south. That is where Israel borders on Philistia, the land of the Philistines. Now, Shiloh, which will feature prominently in this story, is roughly right in the center of Israel. So it's kind of in Ephraim, I think, or Manasseh, something like that. It's right in the guts. So anytime it talks about people going up or going down to Shiloh, it's because Shiloh is very central and you had to journey either up or down to get there.
Was it pretty important for the nation at the time?
Well, up to this point, as we're about to see in this first chapter, it seems to be the resting point of the Ark of the Covenant, and consequently the spiritual capital of Israel as of yet. So, yeah, why don't you take us through chapter 1 here of 1 Samuel?
So we zoomed in, as it were, on a man named Elkanah, who is an Ephrathite.
And he takes up Ephrathite.
And he takes up the mantle of so many in this book, at least at the start, of dudes that have multiple wives because one of the wives doesn't make babies.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that.
I can definitely relate to that. I have so many wives with so many babies.
And so many with so few.
I know, I'm just like, why aren't you making all the babies? Why don't you just go take one from the hospital? So we have two wives, one Penina, or Penina, and one Hannah.
Penini.
Mm-hmm. Penini is not a common name in Australia, but Hannah it definitely is. So interesting that some names get used. And one wife, of course, has children, but Hannah does not. And so the story continues to zoom in on Hannah. In fact, her husband doesn't seem to feature much in the book after this, but Hannah is definitely celebrated. And it's interesting that it's also one of those times where the writer explains it as... where is it? That God shut her womb. Yeah, 6. And her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. And I'm always curious if that's actually God's take on it. Like, I stopped her having children for a good reason. Or that she just can't have children and she's being oppressed and insulted because of that. Like, Nana, you must not be holy because you don't have any babies. And I think it could be both.
There are plenty of women these days that still struggle having children, and it isn't always the woman's fault. Often it is the fault of the man, and something to do with his side of the bargain. But
his junk, as the scientific term is.
I think it's actually a biblical term. Yeah.
True.
And Elkanah's junk was anyway. Don't
was
talk
only
about
working
that.
Half the time.
Yeah. Well, we can see that it wasn't Elkanah who was quote-unquote at fault in this situation because he had kids by Peninni.
Yep.
But because of Hannah's importance to the overall narrative of the entire Bible, I think the amount of emphasis that is placed on her being barren is really, it's a plot device setting up the fact that she will have a child and that child will be influential. And we've seen this plenty of times.
Yeah, especially, it is a good plot device.
Yeah, especially in the formative chapters of Genesis. We have Abraham, whose wife Sarah couldn't have kids, and then because of God blessing her, she was able to have Isaac.
Yeah.
And then Isaac married Rebecca. Is that right? I think Isaac married Rebecca, and she was unable to have kids. And then she had,
Jacob and Esau.
Twins. Yeah. I think she was barren. She might not have been barren, but at the very least, Rachel was barren, Jacob's wife, and Rachel ended up giving birth to Joseph and later Benjamin.
Oh, yeah, but they had different timings of barrenness. Like, sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't. So you just wonder, maybe they just weren't onto it right now.
Yep. Or it could have been that they weren't optimizing her ovulation cycle.
Or she had some stillbirths. That happens too.
Yeah, of course. And miscarriages happen to a third of all women that get pregnant or something. So it's a figure that has not changed over the last several thousand years. So this is something that it's common in the Bible up to this point, but it's also common in real life. So this is it's a real person having a real problem. She can't have a kid. And before modern science, it was probably taken as fact that if you couldn't have kids, then you were not able to have kids. We know that with modern science, there are several techniques that can be used in order for a person to have a baby who previously couldn't. And I would like to go on record as saying I don't think that's wrong. I don't think something like in vitro fertilization is against God's plan, because if somebody gets to have a baby, then that's a really beautiful thing. And maybe it was even God influencing science to get to that point, because he's all about the barren ladies getting to have babies.
He's all about the babies.
He's all about the... God loves babies. Okay, so Hannah getting teased by Peninni.
Come on, Peninni.
And I would also like to echo your sentiment that Hannah is a name that is around these days, and panini is not a name outside of a sandwich that is able to be that's in circulation at the moment. So it looks like we know which one of them was really blessed. And it's the same type of thing with Sarah and Hagar. I've never met anyone named Hagar, and if I did, I feel like it wouldn't be a...
It's a bit of an unfortunate name to have.
No, exactly. Exactly. I'd like to see you go to Subway and order a Hagar sandwich and see what they say.
Maybe it's a ham and gherkin sandwich. Delicious. Ham and gherkin. I'll have the Hagar. Get out of this.
That's a bit like having ham and sweet mustard pickles, though, so it isn't that.
Oh, actually, that's
not that
delicious.
Out of the question. All right,
I would love
so
a Hagar.
Hagar on panini, perhaps.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah. So Hannah's being teased by Panini, and her rival would provoke her grievously, just to irritate her.
Yep.
And it says that it goes on for year after year. And now it does say that they often went up to the house of the Lord. Which we later learn is in Shiloh. And each time they did, Panini would provoke her. And that means that while they were there, I guess she would provoke her for the whole journey. Instead of, are we there yet? Are we there yet? It's, you can't have babies. You can't have babies. Look at all my babies. You can't have any.
Look at all my babies.
and so worst as a result, when they were in Shiloh, Hannah just wouldn't eat. She would often weep. I'm sure she would have had trouble sleeping. And Elkanah, in a bit of a bloke move, is a bit oblivious to it.
Huge
although
bloke move.
I imagine that, as a married man, Jeremy, I imagine that if I had two wives, I wouldn't know what to do with myself most of the time anyway. So I would have a hard time. I have a hard time keeping up with one wife, let alone two. So Elkanah is unaware, it seems, of her being provoked, but maybe he's not. Maybe he knows that Panini teases Hannah, but he just isn't really doing anything about it. Not really doing his duty as a husband. So I think we are up to verse 9. So he's already said, "Come on, aren't I more to you than 10 sons?" Which is,
and she's like, no, not at all.
He's missing the point. He's absolutely missing the point. All right, so then what happens?
So they eat and drink, and she definitely did not. Mm-hmm. And they rose, and Eli the priest was sitting beside them.
Sitting beside the doorpost of the temple.
Before Eli's... Oh, no, I'm jumping the gun. Stop telling all the stories. Okay.
Yeah. Spoilers?
Yep, I'm not going to spoil it. Mm-hmm. So he was sitting on the seat, and she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, then I will give him to... Oh, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head, which is similar to Samuel. So I wonder if she heard about Samuel and she was like, Samson. Whoa, is that? Oh, yeah, sorry. Is that how you get a sweet child? By not cutting his hair. I'll do it. Let me do it.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure Samson's parents, if I'm remembering correctly from probably 5 episodes ago, I think his parents also couldn't conceive. And God appeared to them and said, you are going to have a kid, and he's going to be a Nazarite, and that's going to be... where his strength comes from. I'm just double checking this. So she was barren, and the angel of the Lord appeared to her. So this is a very, very common thing up to this point. And knowing the significant characters that we do that come from this place of barrenness up to this point, it's only safe to assume that Hannah's about to have a kid of great significance.
Very
because
true.
we've had so many people, Isaac, Joseph, Samson, to name 3. so then we're going to have Samuel, and also in the New Testament, of course, there's John the Baptist.
Yeah.
That's a very important figure as well.
But it's interesting too that she didn't give up on God even though these people were throwing it at her face. Like, yeah, the reason that you're not getting a kid is because God doesn't like you, blah, blah, blah. But she's like, no, I'm going to ask God for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to directly ask.
I'm sure Elkanah was sympathetic.
True.
But I, of course, like we've said, I think he missed the point.
Yeah.
That it was about legacy. It was about feeling like she not only contributed to the household, but to the family line and to the story of humanity up to that point and moving forward. So Elkanah, I can imagine Panini teasing her relentlessly, people around her giving up on her having a kid, even Elkanah saying, that's not what's important, it's fine, I'm okay with you not having a kid, yeah, I just want to be with you. But
and she's like, gross, I don't even want to be with you. Just give me a baby.
I don't even
like
you, man.
I don't even like you.
I was your second choice as wife. Come on.
Oh,
all right. So,
buddy.
So she pledges her son in service to the Lord for his entire life to be raised in the temple before she is even conceived, which is a huge step of faith. And I think that's something that is so important that I've seen in my own life, but also in the lives of people I've come into contact with, that when they feel strongly that God has something for them, that God has promised them something, but they're not seeing it fulfilled, it's really important to take the step of faith and say, if I ever do receive this, I'm going to give it right back to you.
Yeah.
And to lay it down in humility. And the Bible says that when we are humble, God will raise us up. But I think it's when we are greedy and claiming something for ourselves in our own time instead of in God's that things don't work out for us how they should.
Yep.
Yes, that's all I have to say.
That's
about
all
that.
I have to say about that.
So I guess she was praying in her head and moving her lips. Or maybe she was whispering, but Eli was too far away.
True.
So Eli sees her mouth moving, I guess, somehow.
Yeah.
Hmm. And
maybe she's from Queanbeyan and she's just speaking with a really weird accent. And he's like, I don't understand. What is that accent? How drunk are you?
Yep. Love the people from the old Queen Bee. So her voice was not heard. Now Eli says, how long will you go on being drunk? Because apparently only drunk people mouth words without saying anything.
Yeah.
Although I guess I know plenty of people that talk to themselves to think because they're verbal processors.
Yeah, me.
And I imagine it would be a similar process if you were in a public place and you didn't want to talk out loud. You could just mouth words and it would help. But at the same time, I'm sure you would look a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe she's doing some air guitar too, because that helps her process also.
I'm sure she was. All right, so he takes her to be a drunk. Put your wine away from you. And Hannah says, no, I'm a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink. So she had stayed away from cordial, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Which is a cool little play with words there. Because
yeah,
she's talking about drinking, but instead I'm pouring out my spirit.
Classic. So she's
very
vomiting.
Nice. Yes, exactly. Don't regard me as a worthless woman. All along I've been speaking out of great anxiety and vexation. Great word. Vexation.
Very good word.
So Eli says, go in peace. May God grant your petition. And she said, let your servant find favor in your eyes. And the woman went on her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. So Would you say this was Hannah taking this as confirmation, or was this more just a chance encounter that cheered her up a bit?
I think if Eli is known to be the main honcho of the temple, mm-hmm. and she probably knows him because they go up there quite often,
yep.
that this is a huge comfort. Like, you remember times in your life where you're like, God, give me this, God, give me this, I really need this, and then someone who didn't know what you were asking for said something specific, like, I feel like God's saying woolly sweater, and you're like, whoa, that's exactly what I want.
Yeah.
This is not to that detail, but it's also the same. Like, she's pouring out her heart to God, and then this man of God is saying, whatever you just asked, that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, I've definitely had times like that. Alright, so they get up early the next morning, they worship before the Lord, and they go back to their house in Ramah. And it says, and Elkanah knew Hannah his wife. I would hope that he did. They were married. And the Lord remembered her. A very interesting sentence.
Very
Elkanah
interesting
Elkanah knew
sentence.
Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It just sounds like two people having a conversation saying, oh yeah, I know about Hannah.
Yeah.
And in due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son. She called his name Samuel, for she said, I have asked for him from the Lord. Now it says, and in due time. Do you think this was an immediate miracle, or was this more like gradually they were able to have a kid like any other couple?
Interesting. I never thought about that.
Because the Bible has been known to skip years and years in a single sentence, so...
Well, it just did in that sentence. Like, right. Elkanah knew Hannah. So, you're right. It could be, like, and in due time, i.e. 9 months, mm-hmm. when it was due. Or it could be, like, 3 years later, after trying a few times, then she fell pregnant.
Sure.
But then you would think... Yep. That
most couples only try to have a kid a few times in 3 years, so that makes sense.
Especially when they're walking around in farms and they're just so tired, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got
sex
two wives.
Three times in 3 years.
Maybe he's got six wives.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, it does say he has two wives, but maybe he had some concubines or something.
Yep.
We don't know much about Elkanah, but we do know that he's a bit of a doggy bloke. Bit of a dog.
And it's interesting that, like, this sentence is so interesting to me because I don't know who told me or when it first was told to me that when someone knows someone in the Bible, that's talking about sex. But what other one-off terms or words do we have in the Bible that mean something completely different, but we skip over because we don't know it? But, like, this one is very obvious because of the context. But what other words have been translated, like, mysteriously that means something huge? Wish there was a dictionary, like Jewish Bible things that you never thought about. In fact, if my computer was on, I would Google that. Come on, computer.
Right, well, I mean, there are some words that have several meanings that are completely different, like the word quicken, for example.
Yeah,
you could say you could quicken your pace, or your spirit was quickened, which means something completely different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's something that is more of an Old English term using in that sense. But you're right. There is no other way to interpret this word new. But if anybody out there has any examples of words in the Bible that don't seem to make sense in the context or even in a sentence, then let us know. We'd love to have a discussion with you. And maybe make up some meanings where we can't find any. Because
now, Eli was very old. That means something like he had a nice sports car.
Now, old in this context usually refers to the flavor of the ice blocks he kept in his freezer.
Ooh, there you go. That's a good one.
I'm just thinking of that because it's very hot here on the Gold Coast.
It's getting pretty warm here too. It's like 7 degrees.
Oh, nice. Well, I no longer have to sleep with an ice pack on my legs. It's a little bit cooler. So we just sleep with two fans on now. And nice. I don't have to... I think we had a blanket on the bed last night. It was mostly on my wife because she's a cold person.
Yep.
And I'm a warm person. And it's just one of those things. During the very hot nights of January especially, oh man, every night I was going to bed with a wet or frozen shirt on.
Yep.
And an ice pack under my legs. And yeah, I mean, it feels good, I guess, but I'd prefer if I was cold in bed and I could just warm up because there's another person in the bed and it's warm.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, so Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay the vow. But Hannah didn't go, and she said, essentially, the next time I go, I will take the child with me after he's weaned, which is, we assume means is no longer breastfeeding, and I will present him as my sacrifice. Not, I mean, not as a sacrifice, but present him as my offering in the temple of the Lord. So she's saying, you go without me, and I'll go up when the child's a little bit older, and then we'll
never see
him
again.
Yeah. And Elkanah says, do what seems best to you. Wait until you've weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. Very interesting comment there. Only may the Lord establish his word. What do you think that means?
That he may or may not think that she's crazy. And he's like, well, hopefully the God will have his way instead of your crazy way, because I don't get it. Because I think he's probably a little bit doughy still.
Okay, so he's saying, all right, you do what you think is best, but I'm just going to leave it up to God, okay? Yeah. All right. Okay, that makes sense. That keeps in line with his character that we've established up to this point. So Hannah stays there, and when he had been weaned, she took him with her, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, we know how much that is, and a skin of wine. I didn't know wine had skin, but
an ephah is 22 liters.
Whoa!
Yeah,
22 liters or / kilograms of flour is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. All right. Probably transported them in some of those big Woolworths bags that kind of have the top that folds over. Yeah.
You go, bull, just carry this for us.
I mean, if it was self-raising, maybe that would be lighter for the bull. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Okay, so they go up to Shiloh, to the house of the Lord. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli. Good thing they didn't get those mixed up. That would have been,
very
devastating.
Here, Eli, this is the bull that needs to live with you forever.
Yeah. Oh, no! What have I done? All right, so then she sees Eli and says, as you live, my lord, I am the woman who was standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. So how old do you think, in the days of the Bible, before mushy pureed applesauce, how old do you think a child would have been before they were weaned, fully off breastfeeding?
Three? Four?
Right, yeah, because I have a niece who is almost a year and a half, and she's still breastfeeding.
Yep.
And that's normal. I think in everyday society now, it's normal to have a child that breastfeeds at least occasionally up until two and a half is getting kind of old for that, I think. So, all right. So, yeah, maybe 3 years old, but they would have been smart about it. They would have had baby food alternatives to normal food. They wouldn't have just said, you go straight from breast milk to big T-bone steak.
Yeah, exactly.
Not pork. Not in Jewish society.
Man, that's just for babies. Pork is.
Right, and do you think Eli would have recognized her or maybe she would have said, I was the one who was standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. And he went, yeah, lots of people stand here in my presence praying to the
Thanks
Lord.
Thanks for the
and
she said,
right, you bye. Thought I was drunk?
Yeah.
Oh, you. That lady.
We've talked about you in our meetings.
We talked about you in HR.
Yep.
You're our new example that we use in certain hypothetical situations. Okay, so then she says, therefore I've lent him to the Lord. He's yep. yours to raise. And Eli apparently didn't know about this because, I mean, she wouldn't have seen him since she had borne the child. So maybe he'd be like, okay, yeah, I'll raise another kid. I mean, I've got grown up sons, but I guess I'll. All right, fine, I'll raise him. Eli went on a journey there, as I portrayed him. He's kind Very of started much. Out all freaked out, and then he's just resolved to it, resigned to it rather. Okay, so then they worship the Lord there, and Hannah prays this beautiful prayer that is similar to what Elizabeth prays in the book of Luke, I believe, when she conceives John the Baptist, or encounters Mary. Either one, it's something like that. It's like the Magnificat, or the Magnificant, or the Magnifican, or the... I don't know.
The Magnifican?
What's the opposite of Magnificant?
Oh, true.
Anyway,
you got to try all the options.
Yeah. So she basically prays something to the effect of the Lord exalts the humble and brings the haughty low. Let me see. There is a my heart exalts in the Lord, my horn is exalted in the Lord, if you know what I mean. My mouth
Yes, I do.
derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. So she's loudly proclaiming the glory of God, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And she says, man, where is it? Maybe it's just that I'm reading the ESV and I know this from the NIV. Yep. So she's
this
saying,
is an epic prayer. I like it.
Yeah. She's saying, don't be proud, be humble. God will give you what he promises and also give it back to God.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. This is a fantastic prayer. She says something interesting though, Jeremy, at the end of it that I want to point out, and that is that she says, the adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. Now, I find this interesting because Samuel is the very priest that anoints the first king of Israel. And she would not have known that upon praying this prayer. But this, in a sense, is a touch prophetic, I think, when she is essentially speaking to the role that Samuel will have in the decades to come.
Yeah.
It says, Elkanah goes home, and the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. So he was raised as a priest boy. I've just started watching Avatar The Last Airbender because it's a cartoon that many people rave about and say is fantastic, and I didn't have cable television growing up, so I never got to watch it as it was released, but watching a few episodes, I'm learning a little bit more about the main character, who is Aang, the last airbender. He's the Avatar, as the title suggests. He's the titular Avatar, and he was raised by monks in a monastery. And it seems to be a very interesting upbringing, very much focused on the teachings of the temple and whatnot. And in this case, Samuel is the last judge, not the last airbender, but he's being raised in a monastery, essentially. Well, I'm sure it'd be more like buildings surrounding the temple, but whatever. That was a side note. Not relevant. Sorry.
But is Aang also in Shiloh?
Maybe. Maybe.
Did they meet in the back of Samuel II?
They meet on an iceberg. Aang had been frozen for 100 years, so that's it's a different story now. Yeah. But what do you think of this prayer that Hannah prays? Because I watched a video by the Bible Project, who I think is a fantastic couple of guys, and they do amazing resources and whatnot, break things down in a very simple manner that is a lot shorter in format than this podcast, but maybe not, I would argue, not as fun. But they're very informative and enjoyable to listen to. They I talk agree. About how Hannah, beginning this this book, sets the foundation of God exalting the humble and bringing the proud down low, and how that kind of sets up the trajectory of this book, and especially the stories of the first couple of kings, where God exalts someone like Saul because he's humble, but as soon as he becomes proud, he brings him down low. So this is it's a great literary device that is essentially giving us an overview of what is to come in a very simple manner that is kind of metaphorical, but if we view the book through this lens, I think it makes a little bit more sense than just taking a story out of context.
Yep.
What do you think of Hannah's prayer? And essentially Hannah in general. Just give us your thoughts.
I like that she is also kind of like an avatar because, although I don't necessarily understand what that is, because throughout Samuel and the Kings and through Judges, it's those who trust God and are almost ignorant of the oppression around them. So when you look at David, he's like, I'm just going to do what God tells me, even if there's a ton of people surrounding my army, we're definitely going to win. Whereas Saul was insecure, and so at first when things were going well, he was like, yeah, God, he's the best. But as soon as some negative stuff started happening in his life, he went to self-preservation mode and ignored God, and that's what was his downfall.
Yeah.
And so here's Hannah, a barren woman who may or may not be the favorite of her husband and is a woman, so she's not in the most economically viable standing in their culture. And still she's just like, well, all I've got is God, so I'll trust him and go for that. And then God gives her a child and she's like, all right, I'm going to give him away. Like, as soon as she gets the child, she doesn't turn her back and be like, oh, sweet, I've got a child, that's all I wanted. She gives it away.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. It's very humble. And we do learn, I think, in the next chapter or something like that, that Hannah goes on to have several children.
Ew.
And that is her, as a humble person, being raised up by God. So it's really cool. Everything comes around. Everything everything comes up Hannah. And it's good stuff. It's very good stuff. Hannah conceives 3 sons and 2 daughters, which is something that we'll talk about in the next episode. But that's, 5 kids after not being able to have a kid for probably several years. Really, really great stuff. So this is 1 Samuel. This has been the overview, the context, and also the first chapter and a half. And next episode, we're going to be talking about Eli's worthless sons, and essentially the downfall of Eli's household and the reason for God needing to raise up somebody to take Eli's place as the head priest of this place. So it's a great book. I'm especially looking forward to interweaving the stories of the prophets with the kings.
Yeah.
And being able to know which prophets interacted with which kings what was happening concurrently, because as we talk about in the introduction of every episode, we are going through the stories in chronological order, so we'll do our best to intercut different books, as well as maybe some psalms that were written as we get to David and whatnot. But I'm especially looking forward to getting to David, because he is a fascinating character with a roller coaster of a story arc through these books.
Yeah,
and I'm looking forward to understanding his mindset in each of the situations he gets himself into a little bit more by looking at the Psalms and the surrounding prophets. So, good stuff. All right, Jeremy, do you have any advice to close off this episode?
When you move into a group house and you are currently living in winter and you have to keep your windows closed, don't store your smelly shoes in your bedroom. But if you do, make sure you have an honest girlfriend who tells you how gross your room smells. That's my advice.
Good stuff. Well, with that said, my name is Ryan.
And I'm Jeremy.
You can find us on all the social medias in the episode description. We'd love to interact with you. Let us know what you think. And may all of your avocados be perfectly ripe.
Ooh, yeah.